Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watsika, Illinois, Aaron Curtis from Midco Commodities in Bloomington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's start with our list of topics we should cover for the day. Ellen Dearden of AgriView, what's on your mind?
Well, I think that I want to take a look maybe at the monthly chart on corn, which mirrors the reversal up that we had on beans the month earlier.
Aaron Curtis of Midco.
Well, always interesting to see what Mr. Farmer is going to do here as we move into spring, but I think the export sales number on corn was good to see, and do we see that continuing to be a trend here as we move forward, and maybe possibly can the USDA need to adjust their export number on corn on this old crop balance sheet here moving forward?
And Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities.
I think where the discussion is going lately, it's almost all bull, and I guess I'd like to try to bring up both sides of the issue and maybe help the farmers the current dilemma he's facing.
So let's go ahead and go with that issue, Merrill. We do hear a lot of bullish things, but what are the fundamentals and the technicals that you see on both sides of the issue?
Well, I see technicals like today where we basically went up, made a new high on beans by 2.5 cents and reversed lower, which is concerning, especially after what we saw last week in the volume. One of the technical things I watch for is what's called a blow-off market. And in the beans, I believe it was Wednesday, we traded more than the U.S. grows in soybean volume. And then for the whole week, it's my understanding from another analyst that we traded more volume last week than the world grows in soybeans. So if that's not a blow-off situation, maybe I don't know what it is. And that doesn't mean that the rally is over and completed. But I think we are setting up a situation here where we may have some sort of retracement that would allow people to get some calls bought in case they want to make sales, or if they've made sales and you know, protect those. What I'm looking at is some of these numbers that are being thrown around with, say, the corn in Brazil. The last I saw yesterday was 4 to 6 million metric ton of losses estimated right now. At 6 million metric ton, you're talking about 236 million bushels. In order to bring our stocks down to somewhere close to, say, 10%, which is where kind of the breaking point where prices really get excited for corn, you're going to almost have to see somewhere in the neighborhood of a 12 million metric ton or a 500 million loss, either just in Brazil or maybe Brazil and the U.S. in total. Just to give you an idea of that 10%, we had a 7.4% stocks to use in 2012. On the bean side of, and looking a little farther, now, maybe I'm wrong on the what I saw for the carryout for the total crop in million metric tons was 54.5 for Brazil's safrinha crop, and they're talking 30% of that being a damage. Well, that's only 4.7 million metric ton if they lose that, all of that 30%. So I'm a little bit confused as why we're going to continue to rally, say, as bullish as people are talking. Beans is not quite as hard to see with the 4 million metric ton we've lost. That's about 147 million bushels. So now we're at 300 million carryout for the U.S. if all the exports come our way. And that's an 8% stocks to use, which is, you know, much more bullish than what we've had with our 12% stocks to use. So I just think we need to be looking at this a little more cautiously than what we've been talking about. It's kind of funny. I was on the 17th and asked about prices that I looked for. I said 480 to 5 on the corn and 10 to 1050 on the soybeans. And when I told my customers that that's what I was shooting for earlier this year, I think they thought I'd lost it. Now, trying to get them to sell beans, and especially beans, it's real difficult because they've gotten all bowled up. And I'll end it right there so that other people can put in their ideas.
All right, Aaron Curtis, I'd like you to jump in on the export figures. They were really good on Thursday morning for corn.
Yeah, really good on corn, about 85 million. I think, you know, if you look at the competitive advantage or how we compare to, say, Argentina and Brazil right now, we do kind of favor the United States right now. And I think we're in this window. This is really a string we've put together for the last 4 to 5 weeks. We've been averaging almost 38 million bushels a week over the last 5 weeks. And, of course, we doubled that here today. So we're in this window where we're much more competitive before, you know, maybe a little more grain starts coming out of Argentina here moving forward. And with some of their weather concerns, I think that probably keeps us in the game a lot longer this summer here than what we had originally figured. So, you know, we only need to average about 14 million sales per week to reach the current USDA goal. So it will be interesting to see how the USDA plays that here as we move forward. But it sure gives you a feel that at least on the corn side, this could be an interesting spring and summer on the export side, which has been, you know, for lack of a better word, pretty dismal up until the last month to 6 weeks. So, you know, obviously we have a lot of catching up to do, but it looks like it's trending back in our favor and hopefully continue here as we move into the summer, especially if that Brazil second crop, like Merrill was saying, is, you know, downgraded, you know, by a few million metric tons. That traditionally ends up being a little bit of a thorn in the side of the U.S. here, especially as we get into the late summer months.
Aaron, how did we get to this point where we're competitive? Is it all about the U.S. dollar?
You know, that has something to do with it. I think it also has something to do with just the available supplies here in Brazil and Argentina, you know, as they finish up their harvest. You know we had a long tail to their big harvest last year, and that really, you know, cut into a lot of the U.S. export business as we moved into last fall and into the winter. But, you know, as far as just available supplies, as they move kind of in between harvest and in between crop years here a little bit, that just gives us a little bit of a window to catch some advantage here. And that's fairly typical here just because of the way the crop years kind of work out. But like I said, part of that's going to be compounded a little bit with some of their late season weather problems that both Argentina and Brazil have. So it's more of a function of, you know, just their available supplies at this point.
Ellen Dearden, let's talk about the monthly chart on corn. You say that it should mirror the reversal that we saw in soybeans last month.
Yeah, we saw a big outside month up in beans a month ago, and it looks to me like we're going to see, unless we really fall apart tomorrow, we'll see a higher monthly close, a reversal up in the corn. Now, it's not that we haven't seen one of those before that was kind of a fake out, because we did both in the fall of 2014 and in the fall of 2015. But I'm really encouraged. You know, it was 30 days ago, 40 days ago, all we could talk about was how much old crop corn was hanging around and that the corn market would never be able to do much of a rally in here, and you know the market was just going to be overtaken by these supplies, and all of a sudden we're 30 cents higher in the corn, probably 35 cents higher for a monthly close up. I'm pretty encouraged with this. I sure would like to see the nearby May corn close above 392, but that'd be a nickel higher tomorrow, and after being up 6 cents on Thursday, that may be a hard go for the last day of the month.
How about for soybeans?
On the bean side of things, a month ago we closed at 910 on the May, and we're up here at 1018. I'm like Merrill. I'm a little bit cautious with the big reversal up. We made a new high for the day Thursday and then closed a penny lower. I think that's really a function of expectations that there's going to be some heavy soybean deliveries on Friday, and the fact that crush margins both in the U.S. and in China have started to falter. Certainly the meal is trying to drag things up, but the bean oil has been extremely weak. So, we're still looking higher in the beans themselves on the monthly chart.
Are the fundamental reasons for beans to go higher, meaning the rainfall in Argentina, is that done? Are there other reasons for it to continue to move higher?
I think the big reason is we've got a weaker dollar and we've got just a tremendous amount of money coming into the commodities market. I did note today that China's securities regulators were told to halt the hefty speculation in commodities on an intraday basis, and whether that can come to pass or not. But a tremendous amount of Asian money has been coming both into the market, the commodities market in Asia, but also in the U.S.
Do we have any good reasons why? And Ellen, I'll stay with you, but maybe Merrill, you can follow up.
Okay, their stock and bond market has been on the skids, so they're looking for something of real value, something they can touch and hold, and commodities fit that, and it also is an inflation hedge.
And I think if the Chinese are going to curb, you know, the amount that you can invest in their commodity markets, I could see some of these bigger money players in China coming over to the U.S. market to play it. So it's not out of line to see that. What I kind of was watching the corn market go regain its strength toward the end of the day while the beans sold off, and I was wondering if maybe we were not seeing that as the beans went up, they were buying beans and selling corn and wheat, and maybe that is we saw the reverse where they were selling the beans and buying the corn today. And it is time for corn to start moving, but I am a little concerned about the beans here in the near term.
Aaron Curtis, what do you think about planting pace in the United States at this point?
Well, we kind of slowed it down here a little bit. You know, we were well ahead of pace there Monday afternoon. I think we're still going to see a pretty good jump on this Monday coming up just because we saw some pretty good progress Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and even into Wednesday in some parts of the Corn Belt. For the most part, the rains have been a little bit disappointing here based on what the expectations were. We had about a half to six-tenths of rain here in Bloomington yesterday and overnight, and that was a little less than expectation. So we're not overly wet for the most part. Now you do get into the southern parts of Illinois and, down as you move even farther south into the Delta, they're pretty wet. But, you know, for the most part, between here and, say, Nebraska, you know, it wouldn't take a whole lot of time to get people back in the field. So I think there's been a lot of corn done in say, central, western, even northern parts of Illinois. A lot of, when you look at just the central and southwest and western parts of Illinois, a lot of corn's already done, and you know, even a few beans are in the ground. And we'll see what this weather event does here over the weekend. Expect in most parts of Illinois to get an inch of rain or so that'll slow down some progress. But it does look like, you know, things shaping up a little bit better next week at this point. And you know, the overall dryness that we've had over the last few weeks, I don't think we would take long for the, you know, producer to get back in the field for the most part. But, you know, I think we see that number jump up a little bit on Monday, and then next week will be time will tell to see how far we go for there.
So last Monday we were at 30% nationwide. By a little bit, you mean another 10% or more than that?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's up somewhere in that 10 to 15%. We'll see. I think there was just a lot of progress done, you know, ahead of trying to beat the rain there Wednesday. And, you can make some argument, right, that the USDA is typically a little behind on their numbers when they come out Monday afternoon anyway. So I guess that would be where I see it, probably somewhere in that 40 to 45%.
Helen Dearden, on Monday of this past week, we were twice the pace we normally are over the last 5 years of the rolling five-year average at 30% planted for corn. That puts it in the optimum range to maximize yield based on planting date in the state of Illinois, and I'm going to use that as just a guidepost to say that's probably the case for all of the United States. Is this going to make much of a difference in how much corn we raise this year under normal growing conditions?
I think the fact that the corn has been able to get in the ground in a very timely, maybe a tad early pace, sets the pollination date a little bit earlier than normal, and any kind of talk about El Nino hurting corn pollination may be a little overblown at this stage of the game. Of course, if you talk to guys in northeast Nebraska that haven't turned anything, they're too wet, have been too wet, over 4 inches of rain in the last week, they would feel completely differently.
Yeah, they're the only one of the top four that hadn't really made very much progress. I don't recall what their number was, but 16% sticks in the back of my mind. Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, the other top three, were all above 40% planted. So the guys in Nebraska are the ones that are dragging well behind, and they're the number three corn producing state in the nation. It's generally Iowa, Illinois, and then Nebraska. So we'll keep an eye on them. I want to come back, Merrill, to your blow-off market comment. What's a classic blow-off market look like, and what does it mean?
Well, you'll have a high spike in volume, and basically what that means is, depending on which side you're seeing the spike, and in this case, we're going up, so we see the blow-off in volume, which means finally the shorts have just decided, you know, they've had enough, and they're just going to get out. The other thing that contributed to that, we had a margin increase on soybeans, and so some people get out because, first of all, they're already behind, and then the second thing, they had that margin, extra margin requirement to it, and they just say that's enough, and they get out. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen right at the top. It can be 2 to 3 days ahead of it, but I'm seeing that. Technically, I'm seeing divergence with my indicators, which has been steadily moving lower in what they call three drives to the top. And again, I'm not trying to say that I think this thing's completely over, but I think we're going to at least see this thing back off and give people an opportunity to maybe get back into this if they want to get into some calls or re-own some of the short sale puts. I'm sorry, re-own some of the calls that they sold earlier. For example, they were selling calls and buying puts to try to put some higher levels into a floor for corn especially.
So let's stay with soybeans for just a second. You haven't mentioned making new crop sales for soybeans, only doing some protection with some options. Do you think that new crop sales should be made for soybeans? We're well above the crop insurance price now.
I recommend it started to work into this market, and I think we've just got the last bit to do, but we're pretty close. I've recommended 50% sales on soybeans, so that's why I guess I'm looking for somewhere here to re-own for some price protection, because I still see, regardless of whether we have a drought or not, any kind of dry spell that we have coming up with all the excitement we've got going now, that perceived drought will definitely give this market another boost. I've been on the show before talking about, you know, the steps that we need to watch for this year's movement. We need to see if we have any weather problems due in South America. Well, we didn't with the first crop. We are now with the second. And now we have to start watching for weather problems with our crop. Currently, it looks like we're getting off to a great start. And I can think, what was it, 83, I believe, also got off to a great start, only to get hammered in the summer.
Ellen Dearden, new crop sales for soybeans.
We've been making some sales all along. I have felt that we're in the right time frame to make sales. I'm also concerned I wouldn't say concerned. I think we've got a normal seasonal price pattern underway. We could extend this rally into June, something along that line, maybe even into July. But I think the worries will put a top in before the actual event makes the top common. I'm extremely worried about late part of this year and January, and I've got a lot of guys that like to make cash sales for those time frames. So we've been edging into protection here. I still have some powder dry, and I am not long called at all at this stage of the game, looking for opportunities there.
Aaron Curtis from Midco. So I know that many of the folks had called for making some new crop sales some time ago. I suspect farmers probably did not do that. They continue to do that. Have they been calling you on new crop soybean sales in the last week?
Yeah, from the elevator system, they have been buying some new crop beans. You know, a lot of cash beans, even old crop, have changed hands here over the last 6 weeks or so from this $1.80 rally, which, you know, really did make sense, as some of these prices are well above what the producer was thinking he would ever receive at this point without any really major change in news, especially during an April time frame. So a lot of cash beans have been sold. There's a few left to buy, so we'll see how that gets treated here as we move, especially if we continue to trade kind of sideways here and continue to find a little resistance up here around this 1035 mark. But you're right, Todd, there have been some new crop beans sold, especially now that we've seen, you know, futures above this $10 mark. You know, like you mentioned, a lot of advisory services saying get some protection on the books. Really not much corn, though. I mean, there's still very little new crop corn bought, and you know, you look at the two comparisons, you can, you know, probably make a case for why that is, with beans well above or at this $10 mark, and still December corn still struggling to get over four comparatively. So, you know, at this point, percentage-wise, much more new crop beans bought than new crop corn.
At what point do you think farmers would start to sell you new crop corn for delivery in the fall?
I think if we saw new crop futures back above four, that would probably start to get some interest, but I still don't think that's too heavy. I think part of it here, Todd, is they've seen the big rally in beans, probably a little bit cautious, thinking, well, you know, can we see some fund short covering in the corn? How much do I want to have sold here, especially as they continue to read some of these private weather forecasts talking about El Nino switching to La Nina and what that means for the weather situation. Obviously, if we got to $4 cash, I think you'd see a pretty interested producer and at least sticking his toe in the water on some new crop sales.
Alan Dearden, new crop sales for corn. What's your plan?
My plan is to use the 410 to 425 area basis December futures to turn pretty active. I have seen farmers selling old crop in here, just putting a toe in the water, not a whole lot. And I think there's more of that to move, and but farmers are looking at both old and new crop on corn, and I think they've discontinued looking at making sales of new crop beans.
We've done some sales on old crop. I'm still looking, which wouldn't be far away from what Ellen's talking about, somewhere in the 395 cash on corn, and then working into the market and trying to get about 50% priced after that, because of the concerns over whether or not we'll have La Nina hurt the crop. I'd like to work the rest of the crop using some sort of put option strategies.
Hey, Ellen, I want to come back to you really quickly. I wanted to get Marilyn on the corn there, but your comment there at the end that they had stopped making new crop soybean sales sounded like you weren't quite convinced that that was the right move for them.
Well, no, I think it probably is until the market says that we've got a lot more downside to come. But I just think that they started selling and, you know, the market kept going up and they would offer in more to the market. And now all of a sudden maybe they're 40 or 50% sold and feeling that that's a pretty big extension for this April time period.
Ellen, talk to me a little bit about the livestock side of the marketplace, both as it requires inputs and then particularly about the beef cattle market and some of the strange things that have happened there over the last month or two.
Well, the cattle market really looks pretty darn ugly, and I think it's a function of the fact that the U.S. dollar has been strong in relation to the Australian dollar. And so we have seen the U.S. export market for beef falter some. The domestic market seems rather good. Cattle slaughter is moved ahead and seems to be well absorbed, but we still have a lot of pork and chicken. I think the big surprise is not that the cattle market has fallen apart, but that the pork market, the hog market, has been as strong as it is. I mean, seems like we're up just every day. We've seen fund money come into this market, and they've latched onto the long side of the hogs and have really pounded on the cattle just pretty relentlessly. We were down the limit in the June cattle today, down the limit in several months of the feeder cattle. Really looks pretty darn ugly. We have been buying corn and meal and have that extended into the June 1 time frame. I'm beginning to think we didn't buy enough, and we're looking for places to cover more feed needs. But, man, I wish I was 100% hedged on these live cattle the way they looked on Thursday's market.
I think there's two situations with the cattle market over, say, the hogs and the chicken. The one is just some of the dietary concerns that we have and some of these people that are trying to work to lose weight. Beef is usually excluded as, you know, say, the bad part of the group, whereas it really is a good protein source. And the other thing is when beef ran up so high, it priced itself out of the market in relation to the pork and the chicken. And from, like, you compare it to last year, we're about 20% lower in the cash cattle market, but we're only 3% lower in the retail beef market. So consumers really aren't seeing that come through for them. And until that retail market starts pricing more competitively, it's going to be tough for us to see the demand pick up here in the U.S.
One more item before I get to your final words, and I'll start with you, Alan Dearden, on the finals. But Aaron Curtis, miles driven have been going up. Is the ethanol industry in good shape for the summer months?
You know, I think overall, I know the weekly numbers here slipped back here a little bit. We're consistently running over 100 million bushels a week. They've slipped back down over a little bit. We're still on pace to meet the USDA goal. There's a lot of corn to buy still, Todd, both on the farm and in the elevator. So I think from that standpoint, there's going to be plenty of corn. I think margins have improved a little bit, and that's a lot of variance depending on, each individual ethanol plant's going to have a different number there. So it's really tough to get an overall read on how margins are doing. But overall, continue to see, like I said, pretty strong weekly grinds. I think the USDA is pretty close on what their number is for the balance sheet this year. Overall, that ethanol market, at least the yearly numbers are somewhat plateaued in this 5 billion to 5.2 billion mark. So growth from here on out is going to take some sort of government intervention at this point. But I think the USDA is close on their number, and I think enough corn to buy here moving forward. The question is going to be probably what they'll have to do with, individual basis numbers here to get some of that to move, because I guess I wouldn't be surprised if we're in a pretty slow pattern again as far as farmer selling on the old crop side. Now, we did see a little bit, on the rally here today, but it's, been overall fairly quiet, and I think the producer is going to, want some better prices here, especially now what he's seen happen on the bean side.
Time for a final word. We'll start with you, Ellen Dearden from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois.
With the Fed Open Market Committee non-event this past Wednesday, we have to consider that the U.S. dollar will remain soft, and that could be good news to continue to see strong corn exports. Watch for the dollar. It might get down as low as 91.5 or 92.
Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois.
Well, I have to concur with what Ellen's saying on that, especially when you look at the fact that we are seeing some bushels being chopped off the Brazilian corn safrinha crop, and their current supply situation is extremely tight. So I look for more exports and the corn price to start waking up and moving higher like the beans did.
Aaron Curtis of Midco Commodities from Bloomington, Illinois.
Todd, we're not too far away from the May 10th crop report. That's going to be our first look at the 16-17 balance sheet. That's a big corn number the USDA is going to plug in there, but I would expect that that balance sheet number at the end of the ending stocks is going to be quickly discounted with the fact that we've probably lost a few of those corn acres, and then just based on this general feeling of maybe some better export demand as we head into the new marketing year.
You've been listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may always hear the whole of our program online at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks to our panelists today, including Aaron Curtis, Merrill Crowley, and Ellen Dearden. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.